were headed over the river and through the woods to Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry. Hello, everyone. I'm Amelia Dalton from eejournal.com. In this week's podcast, we're tackling the trials and tribulations of 7 nanometer. I'm sure you've heard the rumblings around the campfire. Are we really going to get there? Are our tools going to be ready? And is EUV really what it's cracked up to be? My guest David Fried from Coventor is here to help us unlock the mystery of 7 nanometer and ask a very important question that you may not have heard whispered in the ether. Why are we going to 7 nanometer? Just because we can? Well, that might not be good enough. My guest today is David Fried from Coventor. Thank you so much for joining me, David.
Thank you very much for having us. This is my first audio interview, and I'm very excited.
Excellent. I love to hear that. So for a recap for my audience who may not know, what does Coventor do?
Coventor is a software company. We make a few different lines of software, but the one we're talking about today is Semulator 3D. It's a virtual fabrication software platform. And what we do is make predictive modeling of semiconductor processes. And we really focus on integration for some of the most complex semiconductor process flows in the world. We have customers that use this type of predictive modeling platform for back end of line, CMOS transistor technologies, DRAM, and 3D NAND flash, among many others.
So let's talk about nodes. Now we're headed to 7 nanometer, but David, are we really going to get there? The lithography issues surrounding 7 nanometer seem awfully heavy, multi-patterning or even EUV maybe.
So I started in CMOS in 0.35 micron, and we were pretty sure we only had about 2 nodes to go. So yeah, we're going to get to 7 nanometers. 7 nanometers is in many ways going to be a scaled extension from 10 nanometers. You've touched on some of the key challenges, patterning. The dimensions are getting incredibly small. The patterning technology is getting very, very difficult. The big question is, will 7 nanometers be heavily multi-patterning focused, or will EUV begin carving its space at 7. I do believe 7 is the transition technology where some people will get into EUV and some will not. Multi-patterning is incredibly complicated. Many passes on the lithography tool, but also many passes through depositions, etches, cleans, metrology. So the process complexity of a multi-patterning flow is amazing. This is why many of our customers are using virtual fabrication and using predictive process modeling, because the experimental wafers through a multi-patterning flow and the time in the fab is incredibly costly, time and money, and these processes are incredibly complicated. EUV has the potential to knock out a lot of that complexity, but as we know, EUV is taking a very long time to hit the mainstream.
Yes, it is. All right. So speaking of shrinking nodes, as our nodes have gotten smaller and our designs have gotten increasingly complex, the issues surrounding fabrication have also gotten a lot harder. What are you seeing are the biggest fabrication challenges facing us today?
Okay. So we already talked about patterning and this conversion between multi-patterning and EUV whenever it happens. That's the big one. That's the highlight. One of my major concerns is that if we only focus on the patterning challenge, we're going to miss some of the real big, nasty issues out there. There are some serious material challenges that need to be crossed very soon. As an example, in the back end of line, as the lines get narrower and closer together, filling those lines with metal and the liners that have to be put in before the copper or whatever is the next metal, those have to get thinner, and the profile of those films in the trenches has to be managed or engineered. We've been doing tantalum nitride with physical vapor deposition for so many years, and we keep squeezing one more node out of that. But now you're seeing a lot more attention in ALD ruthenium or cobalt liners. So new materials in the liners, because you can engineer the film and the profile in the trenches very well. So those are some of the serious challenges, some of the fill, material, and profile challenges in these shrunk geometries. The other major challenge here is, why are we scaling these technologies? Okay, I think if we only focus on can we scale the technologies, we will. And we may arrive at incredibly complex, incredibly expensive solutions, but scaling is inherently for cost. right? You only go to the next scaled node if the product reduces in its manufacturing costs. So I think one of the other big challenges is that we are developing integrated technologies that are cost effective for scaling. If we end up with a scaled technology that costs twice as much to produce, it will be worthless. So I think it's really important when we focus on patterning, either the complexities of multi-patterning versus EUV, we focus on these material challenges where lots of new equipment, lots of new processes can be incredibly expensive. We may come out the other end with a technology that we wish we had not developed.
That is a very great point, David. Now, let's talk more about your process predictive 3D models. Now, you guys have a virtual fabrication platform here. What do these models buy us as engineers?
The first very valuable application we have is in technology development itself. The way development is typically done is a lot of trial and error, build and test in the fab. Wafer after wafer, lot after lot, and usually it's done in cycles of learning. 3 months worth of experiments, you look at all that results, you make process changes, and then you start another cycle. That's a lot of time, that's a lot of wafers. Many of the experiments are purely physical integration experiments. We can do those virtually. We can model those process experiments, and we do that in a very, very small fraction of the time at a much lower cost. So in base technology development, we can buy, many of our customers, cycles of learning in their development process. So if it takes 3 or 4 years to develop a technology in the fab, if we can take one of those 3 month cycles out, that's incredibly valuable to the engineering teams and the customers and the fabs. So that's really one of the primary examples of what these models buy for our customers. Also, these models are able to predict physical structure and now some of the electrical behaviors of these technologies long before you can ever fabricate them. So one of the big applications is if we can have a better prediction of these electrical performances, we can improve the models that the designers are using before the technology can be produced. If our models are more accurate, there's a better chance the product works in the first fabrication cycle. There's many different examples like this, and that's one of the most interesting parts of my job is our core software gets applied in many different ways. We have many different applications from research process exploration to design rule development, electrical prediction, and even yield optimization. Once the technology is running in the fab, we use a lot of this modeling to model how defects can impact yield or model how process variations can impact yield. Think about cross-wafer process variation can really impact the amount of chips you yield on a wafer. We do have a lot of high-volume manufacturing yield optimization applications, but it's all the same software. It's just applied in very different ways, and so that's been probably the most fun parts of my job is seeing all those different applications emerge.
So, David, let's talk about another fun thing. You have a piece in this year, 2016's DAC Art Show. Dude, tell me more about your art piece.
We saw the DAC Art Show announcement many months ago, and actually my CEO, who's sitting right next to me, he said, oh, we've got to do something for this. I contacted the organizers and found out that people were going to be submitting 2D art, dye micrographs and images, things like that. I said, we're a 3D modeling company. We're not doing 2D art. And so we started this project to produce a very, very large 3D printed version of one of our models. It turned into a bigger project than I thought it would be. But basically, we did the process modeling for an advanced technology using Simulator 3D. We then worked very closely with a company called Stratasys. They make some of the most advanced 3D printers in the world. We developed some interesting code to interface our models with one of their more advanced printers. And we did a full single part 3D print. And it's about 10 inches by 10 inches by 10 inches. It's quite large. And it's a single print and it's on display. It's gotten a lot of notice. So I'm very excited about it. I think it looks beautiful. A lot of people have given us a lot of positive feedback. And it was an exciting little research project.
Excellent. That is super cool, David. Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. This was a lot of fun. I appreciate it.
So if you were wondering, yes, it's exactly 46 days till my birthday. So this week's Kickstarter Corner is dedicated to the gift I would most like to receive. Or maybe you'd like to buy one for yourself. Either way, let me introduce you to Kyber Light, the greatest custom lightsaber in the galaxy. These completely customizable and seriously fun lightsabers come from a team of engineers in Provo, Utah. With a love of Star Wars in their hearts, they set out to engineer the world's greatest combat-ready custom lightsaber. So yes, there are other lightsabers on the market, but none of them are as cool as the Kyber Light, in my opinion. Why? Well, let's get started. First, customization, and did I mention, customization. These Kyber Lights offer a starter accessory kit that comes with 12 different accessory options. And their long-term plan is to offer a new custom accessory item each month so I can continue to expand my collection. Or your collection. Either way. Also, Kyber Light uses proprietary LED technology in their sabers. Interesting. So, each Kyber Light saber allows you to toggle between 20 built-in colors with a simple touch of a button. And these bad boys put out over 320 lumens. And if you're wondering, yes, that is the brightest lightsaber in the galaxy. So far. The blade itself is also made from a proprietary plastic blend, which they claim makes it virtually indestructible. And get this, if you and or your toddler or dog manage to break the darn thing, they will replace it for free. These sabers also come with rechargeable batteries, cool sound effects, as you can imagine, and a best pricing guarantee. So cool. So, small print time. Backing this Kickstarter campaign isn't cheap. Sure, you can pony up $20 and get a t-shirt. $49 will get you a t-shirt and some saber fighting gloves. Okay, that's kind of cool. But the good stuff only comes in the triple digit range. $199 will get you a t-shirt, those cyber fighting gloves, and a standard saber. But $299 will get you all of this and a full customization accessory pack. But wait, there's more. $499 will get you a set of two sabers and accessories with gloves and t-shirts, of course. So I'm thinking one for me and one for you. Okay? And hey, almost the best part of the whole darn thing is... the estimated delivery time is August of 2016, my birthday month. Okay, so the real question is, how do I sneak a $299 charge into my expense report this month? Research? Yeah, research. That's the ticket. If you want to fund this Kickstarter campaign, I've included a couple links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com. When I get mine in the mail, I will definitely tell you guys all about it. You know what engineers are really good at? Making ideas into reality. Sure, millions of people around the world have come up with billions of ideas that went absolutely nowhere. But we engineers know that turning your idea into a working project begins with a good development kit. And don't tell the rest of the world. It can be just our little secret. Okay. And speaking of a good development kit, have you heard about Launchpad? Well, my friends, if you haven't, or maybe you have and you're dying to hear more information, I would like to introduce to you EE Journal's most recent episode of Chalk Talk entitled TI Launchpad Ecosystem. In this episode, I sit down with Daniel Ogilvie of Texas Instruments and talk all about this Launchpad business, why you want it, what it can do, and why it's a great fit for getting your big idea into a working prototype. You can check out this episode of Chalk Talk by clicking the link below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com, by heading on over to YouTube, keyword eejournal, or by navigating on over to the on-demand section of eejournal.com. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And hey, if Google Plus is your thing, you can also join our circle on Google Plus. We also have that YouTube channel I mentioned earlier, keyword EE Journal, chock full of all kinds of techie videos, our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series, and our video series called On the Scene. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. I'm just saying. Hey, also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can grab our Fish Fryin' RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Fryin' page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of June 24th, 2016, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.